coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
The AI minister is expecting 83 children.
Is this just not the Albanian government using like ChatGPT?
Politics is absolutely ripe for this
stuff. Does AI know the difference between crisps and a gun? Well, I'm not happy, am I? I'm not happy.
Christmas purchases last year, 1 in 5 were discovered through LLMs.
That's unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
It makes me want to vomit in my mouth. But
what is this? What is the why behind this
was
question?
The name The Zuck ever used? Hello and welcome to AI Haven't a Clue, the podcast with the expert on all things nothing. It's me, George Butler.
The average human. And the real expert, of course, me, James Chandler. George's handler, I got quite a bit of a stick for last week, like trying to get him to, it's a joke. It's just a joke. Don't endorse me on it on LinkedIn. It's just a joke. It's
help,
fine. I'm not his handler. He's his own man.
Help me. This is the podcast where we try to crack the code of what on earth is going on with this AI business. Mm. And on this week's edition, it's packed full of this week's news, including, yes, the AI minister, who is with child, a bot presenter on the telly, and confusion between crisps and guns.
Yeah, we've got a brilliant guest this week, Zara Chatu, who is talking to us about bias in AI, particularly when it comes to gender, which is well-trodden ground on this podcast.
And we're giving away an AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt venue!
Boom.
And very exciting. We'll be modelling them. Keep your eyes out for that. We'll be modelling them on our socials shortly. Expect the followers. The followers to fly up. We're giving an AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt away to the listener who is asking a question to James this week. A challenging, difficult question. If your question's easy, you're going to get the wrong size. I'm going to give you a small if you're a large.
Punishment.
That's punishment. Make it extra hard and you'll get the right size. Right, let's kick off with what's been making headlines in the world of AI this week. Starting with all the headlines, James, were about your half marathon, weren't they?
Wow. No AI involved in that. A little bit of AI, actually, on the pacing
AI
chart.
AI coaching.
But, thanks for the shout out. Thank you. No, we're not talking half marathons.
Yeah.
We're talking about some old pals of the podcast who are on Channel 4 this week.
We are, yeah. So we had a couple of brilliant, interesting, controversial, I should add, young entrepreneurs from Seraphine Valora. They created that really, well, controversial guess ad that was placed in Vogue, and they came on, they were telling us all about it. We had a bit of a back and forth because it's ground which is kind of fraught with issues, but also they were quite inspiring in another way, weren't they, James? But they've been making big headlines once again this week.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, we were off mic where they said they had something lined up that they couldn't tell us about, and I think this was it. And this was Channel 4 Dispatch's brilliant documentary series. It became the first British TV program this week to feature an entirely AI-generated presenter, and they used it as a stunt. They didn't tell anyone to demonstrate how realistic and advanced AI is. So you sort of heard this presenter, and then at some point she goes, and by the way, I'm not real, I'm AI, and this bit I did just now, that wasn't real. And behind that, in this documentary, were Valentina and Andrea, and they were pitted against a bunch of other AI experts to come up with the presenter, and they were the ones that won out. So it was their presenter, it was their guest model, and it was their presenter on the Channel 4 documentary.
But I do see a big difference between those girls and the Inception Point AI lot that we had on a week or two ago, because Inception Point AI is literally churning out a load of slop without any care, whereas these girls, yes, it's AI generated content, but done through the lens of creativity and human skill. So I do kind of respect them in a way, even though of course I don't think an AI presenter is ever going to replace a real presenter, but I do respect that they are bringing a layer of creativity and skill to AI. It's almost using AI as a tool.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt differently when we talked to Janine, who's the founder at Inception Point. I thought there was care that was going into it. It is just at this different scale. Like, they're playing a numbers game, whereas...
What care like do you think was going into Inception Point AI, out of interest?
Just that, you know, she talked about these characters, these personalities. They're not just kind of thrown together. For me, I felt they were really, really intentional about how they were building them, the views they would have, the areas they wouldn't go into. But it's numbers for them, it's scale. Whereas for Valentino Andrea, it's not about scale. It's about creating this one thing, this one model in Vogue, this one presenter on here. And maybe because it's the one thing and that's all they're focused on, maybe that indicates that there's kind of more care going into it. But I didn't think that, I didn't think Inception Point A, I didn't get the sense that Janine was careless, put it that way.
We're going to agree to disagree slightly on this, but interesting to see that, you know, feasibly an AI presenter can get away with doing that role. Will we see more of it? Probably.
Yeah, and I love that Channel 4 did it. I mean, they've always broken barriers on this stuff. You know, full transparency. I worked for them. I started my media career at Channel 4, and I love being there. They broke the mold with things like Derren Brown, the first Big Brothers, you know, all sorts of stuff where they've been the first to do it. What they've done around Paralympics, you know, this now, you know, they're not frightened to lean into this stuff, which is sort of pretty scary and existential for, you know, a bunch of people probably working for production companies at Channel 4. The senior up boss, the exec, said that the experiment was a warning about AI's disruptive potential, highlighting both its creative possibilities and the risks that it poses to trust, authenticity, and of course, human jobs. So playing out both sides rather well there. Yeah, well done, Channel 4. It's a really good documentary. If you haven't watched it, go and watch it. Will AI Take My Job? Dispatches.
Talking of risks with AI video, deepfakes are getting... I mean, incredibly realistic now. So I saw a Sora video.
Sora.
You talked about it the other week, didn't you? The OpenAI video. So I saw one where the
you
queen.
You saw a Sora.
I saw a Sora with the queen, right? And it was the queen eating some form of like barbecue food.
Oh,
was
that the Jamaican? Yes, the chicken thing. Yeah.
I was genuinely for about 10 seconds. I was like, oh, this is kind of crazy that the queen did it.
And no.
Honestly, I swear to you, I was quite tired probably, but you know, it caught me out and it was ridiculous. It's not like it was something obvious or real. It was the queen eating jerk chicken. And this is the thing. There are issues that are being created though because of how realistic these deep fake videos are becoming.
Yeah, and this week sort of pulled it into sharp focus. And Meta removed an AI-generated deepfake video which falsely showed then Irish presidential candidate Catherine Connolly, now of course gone on to be the president, it showed her withdrawing from the race. She never actually did it. It's of course a deepfake. Was viewed over 30,000 times. So it does raise some big, big questions, you know. Interesting link to the Channel 4 piece where they're saying it's about trust, authenticity. You know, exactly the same here. And I just think politics is absolutely ripe for this stuff. We've probably seen it play out in the States between Harris and Trump, Biden and Trump. You know, no doubt there was a kind of bit of that going on, but it doesn't fill me with hope when we have, you know, different actors get involved in, you know, our own politics, you know, the way that some of the parties are being funded, the types of backers that they've got, and, you know, deepfakes, just you're not able to tell, man on the street just isn't able to tell kind of what's real, what's not. So it's a worry. I think the platforms, people making these tools, you know, really have to step up. The labelling's got to be better. People have got to be absolutely in no two ways that, you know, this is real and verified and this isn't, and that has to fall on the platforms because the government and regulators aren't going to be able to move quick enough on this stuff.
It's a huge issue, and I just do not see a way in which the platforms as they currently exist can react as quickly as they need to stop the spread of fake news. They need to, however, it's their responsibility in my view to find a way. So he's hoping that there is sufficient pressure on them.
It makes me think about this point. Phil Rowley says it a lot. You're going to hear our guest later on, Zara, talks about it. This democratization of creativity, which is a posh word for saying anyone could be a creator now. Anyone can be a photographer. Anyone can be a movie maker. They can be a songwriter because you're kind of prompting stuff. There's a really positive route for that, which is great. It enables people to do anything. There's also the shadow of that, which is these tools are in the hands of everyone and anyone can create these deep fakes. It's not just trained professionals or, you know, big criminal syndicates that are doing it. It's someone in their bedroom that can do it. And I think that's the kind of the worry, is the fact that everyone's got these tools at their fingertips, probably free versions, and even if it's not free, it's costing you £20 to do it. So I think that is a worry as well.
James, what's going on at Amazon then?
Two things. Very positive thing. Smart glasses, your favourite. Amelia are going to be... You must be all right with Amelia as a name. That's fine, isn't it? It's not, you know, cyborg.
It was more smart glasses.
Okay, yeah, AI-powered smart glasses. They're designed...
Is Amelia like Alexa's cousin or something?
They're kind of stuck on A, aren't they? Maybe there's a thing. So anyway, these aren't for ordinary folk like you and I. These are prototype AI smart glasses for their delivery drivers. So they've got a built-in display, they've got a camera, and a little button on their waistcoat so they can photograph deliveries. You know, they always take a photo when it's on your porch or it's gone through a thing or something like that. They're testing it across the US. Hundreds of drivers are using it. It could eventually roll out globally. The big one here, and we always say this bit's seductive, Amazon say the glasses can boost efficiency by up to 30 minutes per shift, which if you times the number of shifts, is going to be pretty incredible. Alongside the glasses, Amazon introduced an AI-driven robotic arm. Ooh, lovely. And a warehouse management system. Why on earth didn't that make it to the top of the press release? I don't know.
It's like the Terminator working for Prime.
We all want this next day delivery.
I'll be back with your package.
Always leave it, in my opinion. So, yeah, loads of stuff going on at Amazon.
So, interesting, positive, in a way, use of AI to boost efficiencies. Also quite a terrifying Amazon AI efficiency story, as well as they've just announced they're going to cut 14,000 jobs.
Yeah, these aren't warehouse jobs either. These are corporate jobs. So... You know, lots of the narrative around Amazon is that it's performing incredibly well. But they're saying, you know, across our business, they're doing really well. Customer experience is really, really good. They're innovating at a rapid rate. But what they're asking people to remember in the context of these job cuts is that the world is changing very, very quickly. They talk about AI being, you know, the most transformative technology of a generation. And then there's some sort of corporate speak about enabling companies to innovate and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's got to Amazon. It's got to one of the big ones, 14,000 jobs. I mean, it's a big number. I mean, they're a huge, huge global workforce. Don't get me wrong, but it's still fairly sizable. I mean, it's kind of bigger than the Klarnas. It's bigger than the Salesforce, you know, lots of the other ones that we've talked about. But yeah, certainly a shadow to robotic arms and warehouse management systems.
James, news from, I'm going to call a friend of the show because we talked about her, it, a few times. There was a story a little while back about how Albania have introduced an AI minister, a digitally created minister to help them run their country, hilariously. Now this AI minister is with child, not just
yes.
child, sorry, with 83 child.
Yeah, it's a big one. They haven't been mucking around. Delia, as she's called, is pregnant with 83 virtual children.
Hey, I'm not going to make any judgments. You do what you want to do, Delia. You live your life.
It's all pretty practical stuff. So the 83 virtual children, they're going to be lined up to help MPs. They're going to monitor meetings. They're going to record debates. They're going to give suggestions when people are absent. But it's certainly a sort of a development, if nothing. I mean, you thought they'd have one or two and test it, but they seem to have sort of gone in 2 feet at the deep end. It must be working exceptionally well for them to roll out another 83.
But can I just ask though, James, is this just not the Albanian government using like ChatGPT? What is the whole thing about like 83 children? Like, what? You're just rolling out use of AI across what you do in government. It's a bit weird, isn't it? Like the way that they're talking about it.
It is a little bit weird. And careful listeners will remember from last time we talked about, you know, this is all well and good. There's some big critics in the country who are saying, actually, this violates our constitution. We need some real life humans. It's a salesy kind of PR releasey thing, you know, what's next, 1,083 children or whatever it might be. So it's an interesting one. I think we have to see some results before we judge whether it's good or not good. But you know, fair play, trailblazing as ever, Albania, love it.
I should add that Delia, obviously Delia, the AI minister, is now known as Delia 2.0. Delia has a voice now and an animated avatar. So there you go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair to say reactions have been mixed. A few people have welcomed it. Many opposition members have protested. So Delia 2.0, not so popular. Right, we're going to move on now to Elon Musk. We just can't get away
for one week
without talking about bleeding Musk. But he keeps doing stuff in the world of AI, so we've got to keep talking about him. He's not a fan, James, of the woke Wikipedia.
No, he's launched Grokopedia, an AI-powered online encyclopedia.
These names, man.
I know. It's going to reflect his more conservative views, obviously as a rival to Wikipedia, which he's saying, as you said, is entirely woke. Obviously, the thing to remember with Wikipedia is that it's entirely volunteer edited. So it's not like a load of woke people are deciding what's in it. Anyone in the world can sign up for an editor and go and change something if they don't think it's right. That's sort of by the by. Grokopedia articles are going to be generated by AI, then fact check, I put that in inverted commas, by Musk's AI chatbot Grok. And visitors will only be able to suggest edits via a form, not directly edit the content as you can on Wikipedia, which is kind of weird for someone who loves free speech, but there we go. The irony in this is that some of the Grokopedia entries are currently adapting Wikipedia content, so they're just sort of like shifting things sideways, which is weird. And there's a massive scale thing here. If you think about Wikipedia, it's 7.1 million articles in English. You know, Grokopedia's got less than a million, but it's obviously going to grow. Interesting from Elon. I mean, sort of keeps him top of the news agenda. I'd imagine Sam Altman will probably come out with a competitor that's, you know, 10 times as good next week or something like that.
Grokopedia, everything from the name to the idea, it makes me want to vomit in my mouth. Woke Wikipedia. What's woke about Wikipedia, man? This guy is ridiculous. I also, goodness knows, if Wikipedia's woke, what Grokopedia is going to be saying.
No.
You know what? Don't want to find out. AI, James, this crazy little thing called AI. We talk about it every week. This thing that you think is so good, it's so great, we love AI. Well, it's not so clever all the time. Because this is one of my favorite stories for a while. AI, you know what? James, I'm not even going to introduce this. I'm just going to leave this with you to just go with it.
Story from the US. A 16-year-old Baltimore student was handcuffed by armed police after an AI-powered gun detection system mistakenly flagged a Doritos packet in his pocket as a firearm. Initial thoughts from George Butler there.
What on earth is going on? How? You know, in what world have they taken a packet of cool Doritos? It could have been ranch flavored, who knows, and mistaken it for a gun? What's going on?
There's an alert system called OmniLert, which is the AI provider here. They said the alert process function is intended, emphasizing rapid human verification, but the object was later confirmed not to be a firearm. I mean, in a country where people are carrying guns, and if you think someone else has got a gun, it might be all right to open fire on them. It's only a crisp packet. I mean, this could have been devastating. I mean, it was only handcuffed and, you know, a bit ruddy faced afterwards. But I mean, this could have been interesting, particularly when you're getting into things like weapon detection with AI. We've talked about hallucinations. We've talked about getting things wrong. The margin for error here is pretty, pretty tiny.
Yeah, I mean, poor Taki Allen, the 16-year-old, a Baltimore student. He was handcuffed. He must have been so scared. I can only imagine he must have just turned with that packet of Doritos in his pocket to the police and says, "That's Nacho gun."
Is that the whole reason we've got this story? It is, isn't it? That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
Should we move on? Let's move on. Okay, James, your big thing this week, in more positive, inspiring news, we're going to be talking about...
Sort of. The 20 jobs most at risk from AI. This is an article in The Times.
Right.
Nothing here will kind of come as a surprise, but it's a bit of work that's been released. Assuming you haven't read it, what would you guess would be in that sort of top 10? What sort of jobs would you have in there, given that we've done 20-odd episodes of this podcast?
I mean, translation is obviously the one thing that always does come up. Is that in there?
Yeah, number one. Interpreters and some translators.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good. I do listen. Something to do with like accountancy or something like that.
Yeah, sort of. They're sort of in the top 10. Yeah. Mathematicians gone. Yeah.
Something to do with like people that speak to, you know, Karen's moaning about things.
Customer service people. Yes.
Yeah,
but most worrying, number 10, broadcast announcers and radio DJs. I mean, we're not technically, I mean, you're more radio DJ than I am. But that's worrying, number 10. Yeah, you've got all sorts
of
things.
When you say more radio DJ than you are, you mean I am a radio DJ.
You are, right?
You work more for the IAB than I do.
Yes, you are an actual radio DJ. I was trying to protect you in this. You're in the top 10 of jobs most at risk at AI,
I'm
my friend.
I'm not happy, am I? So, I'm not happy.
Right, here's the top 10. Interpreters and translators, historians, passenger attendants, assuming on a plane, sales representatives, so you're right on that, writers and authors, customer service, you're right on there, tool programmers, telephone operators, ticket agents, and as we just said, broadcast announcers and radio DJs. That's the top 10. No massive surprises in there?
Ironically, you just delivered that like a radio DJ going through the top 10 charts.
You're
but no, I guess no massive surprises there. I am Rumble, James. I don't think I think human connection is going to stay, and I think the roles where human connection is important, like the broadcasters, like the writers, the passenger attendants, that kind of stuff, I don't see it coming.
Well, Janine Wright at Inception Point AI is onto something with these hosts and DJs. They could be
Let's move on. Let's put you to the test in my favourite part of the show, because you get to swear just a little bit as we welcome a fantastic listener question in. And moving on from our AI Haven't a Clue mugs, we have brand new, and I think they're really nice, AI Haven't a Clue t-shirts. We're going to be wearing them at the Future of Media. We're also going to be giving them away. If you're there on Wednesday, you will be in with the chance of winning them. But winner of this week's AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt is Andrew. Andrew, let us know what size you are, but also we want to see this.
Yeah.
We want to see a photo of you on the socials. Tag us wearing your AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt. They're very snazzy. The question from Andrew this week is, if a great many podcasts are totally made with no human involvement, how long until the majority of listeners are also AI?
Good question. I think Andrew is touching on a slightly creepy idea called dead internet theory, and this is the belief that most of what we see online actually won't be made by people at all, but made by kind of AI and algorithms and bots, which will just be talking to AI algorithms and bots, and we'll just be sort of trawling, scrolling through all of the sort of the leftovers. If you apply that to podcasts, I mean, you know, having Janine Wright on from Inception Point AI, you can kind of see a future there. AI's editing shows, it's generating characters, voices, it's even, you know, clipping stuff up that's kind of going on social. So that's the presenter bit. Is there a whole slew of AI listeners, if you like, out there, you know, bots sort of scraping, listening things? Don't know. I mean, maybe smart assistants will be pulling stuff in for it, but I'm not that convinced in it. So maybe within, you know, 5 to 10 years, you'll probably see an increase of AI listeners.
I don't understand. What is an AI listener? Why does that? Surely an AI listener is not a real listener. It doesn't count.
You might, for example, have an agent where, or you might be searching for something. Oh, I remember hearing this thing on this podcast once upon a time. Go and find it for me. The AI would have to, in inverted commas, listen to the podcast, hunt through the transcript, find the thing and kind of get it. So you could have lots and lots of agents listening to lots and lots of different things to bubble things up. I really don't think we're going to get there. I don't think we're going to be in a world where the majority of listeners to AI podcasts are going to be AI listeners. I mean, I hope not. I mean, show me the ejector seat if that is the case. All this kind of human connection stuff, as you talk about, is not going to go away. I think the space gets a little bit noisier, perhaps, until we as humans sort of carve out our own niches on things, which will bring a smile to your face, I'm sure. So, yes, I don't think we're heading for this dead internet theory thing of AI talking to AI and us just sifting through the slop that's left.
Good question, though, Andrew, and thank you so much for sending in that t-shirt.
Enjoy your tea.
And if you fancy winning a t-shirt, they're kind of cool. They're nice. You can ask James a question. We would love you to ask that. Email us aihaven'tclue@gmail.com or, of course, comment it on the socials.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Today, we're joined by Zara Chattu, a strategic leader with over two decades of experience at the intersection of advertising, culture, and technology. She's worked with some of the world's biggest brands and fast-growing startups, driving growth and creating award-winning campaigns. At Meta, in her previous role, Zara led strategy and insights for the Global Business Group and helped shape the future of brand building, creator culture, and inclusivity in AI, which is exactly what we are getting into in this conversation. Enjoy.
Well, Zara, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. You've been in the tech space for a fair while. You've had leadership roles at Meta. I know you've recently left Meta. I kind of wanted to start with a question, which was about the broader tech world. And we're going through this AI-driven tech landscape. Do you think it's a crazier time in tech than it's ever been in your whole career?
Do you know what? I think that in my experience, the tech landscape has always been intense. It's always been pretty crazy. And so, because I came from an advertising background into tech, and I just, every single sort of 6 months, there was a new level of intensity. And so I feel like that intensity is just the new normal in tech. And I think you just get used to that. I think everything that we're seeing with AI is supercharged, and just the investments that are being made and that kind of race to win in some ways between platforms, yeah, adds to that. But it's always had this like undercurrent of just intensity. And I think that's been a very exciting part of it and a very normal part, actually.
Did you feel that pressure? You talk about the AI race there, yes. Which is, we talk about the AI wars on this podcast with all the big tech giants.
Yeah.
Did you feel that pressure?
No, because I just think it's very normal. That sort of kind of way of working and operating and just knowing that change is pretty normal, actually, and the skills that will serve you well are around adapting and experimenting, and you're just sort of in that space all the time. So yeah, I would say it's just the new normal, and I think every single industry has its own level of pressure, whether it's pitching, whether it's, you know, this AI race or whatever it might be. And you sort of just adapt to that.
James, we've got loads of questions to ask you about the new venture, about the world of AI. Before we move on from Meta, I've got a question for you.
Different.
Mark Zuckerberg at Meta. Did he have a little nickname?
In the office, in the building.
What would you call Mark Zuckerberg?
What is this?
What's the name?
What's the question?
What is the
why behind this question?
Was the name The Zuck ever used?
Thank you. At last.
I would refer to Mark Zuckerberg as Mark Zuckerberg.
That was a political answer. That wasn't a no, James. That wasn't a no. There's a bit of a long-running thing here. James refuses to believe that the Zuck is ever used at Meta HQ, but I've heard differently.
No, I've got intel. And now we've got someone, a seasoned professional with a stellar career at the company you're talking about, who's just given you a straight answer.
Okay.
So we don't have to ever talk about this again.
Well, here's a yes or no question, Zara. Have you ever heard the name the Zuck ever used at Meta HQ? Was it ever used?
I mean, yes, I have heard that being said, but it's not the way
Of course.
Can I ask some serious questions?
Why?
We can move on now, James. Go on, you do the... You see, this is what happens here. I ask the questions people want to hear. James asks the AI questions.
Let's get some decorum. Look, tell us, you've gone from this huge corporate organization to founding this new organization, yes. Code for Good Now. You will no doubt be highly versed in the sort of the elevator pitch on it. Give it to us, Zara. What is Code for Good Now?
Yeah, so Code for Good Now, well, that it's a mission-based strategic consultancy. So, you know, just being in tech, I've always seen technology as an engine for opportunity. But you do need to point it in that direction. And I want to play a bigger role in contributing to that opportunity and removing bias. And so Code for Good Now looks to do that. Our mission is to really minimize bias in AI adoption. We provide strategic consultancy to help brands grow in this new kind of landscape. We have a focus on trends and culture. And we have an AI product called RepIQ, and that is all around kind of using AI to really analyze the representation within your advertising, and we'll give you a score and an index. We know representation drives growth by 16%. So it is a kind of an offer to really wrap around culture trends and brand building, which is sort of what I spent my kind of career doing.
At what point did it come to you that you wanted to go and do something like this that was purpose driven, that was your own thing? Do you remember that moment?
I think this is something I've always wanted to do. I have always believed in sort of driving change from the inside of organizations. And so, you know, that's why I joined Meta, just like a platform, 3.2 billion people. How can I drive change? Wow, that's really fascinating. And, you know, as someone who is focused on insights and trends and strategy and kind of changing consumer behavior or influencing consumer behavior, I found that really fascinating. But I think we are seeing shifts in structures, and I believe that this is a moment where we need freedom to sort of build frameworks from the ground up. I think that it's a really critical moment when it comes to AI adoption. You know, we are like, you know, you've got this podcast, AI, I haven't got a clue. You know, everyone's talking about AI. It's so critical. But this is a really important moment because I think we've got this sort of once in a generation time to get this right. And we still have time to, you know, we're in that moment now. And so Code for Good Now, the most important word is now, because I do think there's an urgency when it comes to, you know, really sort of breaking the bias here. Because AI is a technology that is built by its usage. You know, the input shapes the output. And so I really want to contribute to ensuring that we remove the bias in how we're using it so that the output is more effective and drives greater levels of effectiveness.
I mean, I think there is undoubtedly inequalities in AI. We've talked a lot about this before. But from an expert's point of view, What bias? What inequality? Where do you see the biggest issues lying in that space in regards to AI?
So when it comes to AI, there's a real sort of bias with gender adoption. So women are adopting AI between 20 to 25% less than men. And so, you know, given the input really impacts the output, I think it's critical to kind of bridge that gap. And actually, when you kind of unpack that in more detail and really kind of think about, well, what are the barriers to that? Because what's really fascinating is even when women have equal access to AI than men, we're still seeing this gap. So
why?
It's not an access problem.
Do we know why?
Yes, the primary reason is women associate it with cheating. So it's like, okay, you know, this is kind of giving someone an unfair advantage, or it's like, well, I, you know, the whole perfectionist space that can, you know, impact women as well more, really plays into this. And this sense of shortcuts and cheating is the biggest thing that's preventing equal adoption.
I mean, James and I can testify, we love a shortcut. James and I, along with many other men, love a shortcut. How do we fix it, though? That's the big question. How do we fix it?
Yeah, well, interestingly, so, you know, if I go back to the research, is actually a really sort of Harvard Business School piece, and it's kind of over 100,000 data points. And actually what they found was there was this sense of perfectionism and cheating as the number one thing. And then the second thing was this digital confidence gap as well that impacts women. One of the accelerators to this is training. In fact, just by kind of focused training on AI in the workplace can treble adoption when it comes to kind of more kind of equal adoption of AI and role modeling that it's not a shortcut. You know, this is actually, think about this as a collaborator to make the output even better, as opposed to a competitor, or, you know, it's us against AI, or, you know, this is something that is, you know, an unfair advantage. It's not that at all. And so a part of the offering within Code for Good now is training. It's and I think that's really, really critical around, okay, how can we start to really bridge that gap? We've called it permission to prompt. And it is all around, you know, we start off with a diagnostic around, okay, what does the skill set look like in your organization when it comes to certain teams? And then kind of sprints and training around how we can start to resolve that. And a lot of role modeling as well around, this is what great looks like and look how it's used.
I guess in a business like Meta, that role modeling is quite easy. I mean, at its heart, you know, Mark's on record saying AI is the future of this business. People are doing it. Mm-hmm. There's dog fooding going on. You know, people are playing with all of this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
We talk to other businesses who, you know, the senior leadership they've got this dual thing, this really exciting thing they know they should be doing more with. And just this sense that, what's it going to kind of take away from me?
Yes.
And perhaps they don't understand it. So you're not getting that role modeling. What do you say to businesses like that, where maybe they don't have an AI policy as such? They've got people using different tools. Mm-hmm. People aren't disclosing mm-hmm. what they're mm-hmm. using. Women in particular, mm-hmm. as you say, mm-hmm. are kind of not doing because they feel like they're cheating. How do they take that step to embed it a bit more in an organization and get better at it?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is just getting started, actually, and just embedding it within your daily life, making it really habitual. And, you know, you can use it from a professional perspective, but also from a personal perspective, and just really shifting the conversation from this being a competitor to a collaborator. There can be a negative narrative.
Yes.
Now, I think we should stay skeptical. I think that's really important. And it's important to stay skeptical so that we are constantly asking the uncomfortable questions and the challenging questions. But I think there's a difference between being skeptical and cynical. And I think it's important to stay skeptical. And so I understand why there is this resistance. But the technology is here and it's being used. And so, you know, it's like a supercomputer in your pocket. Use it. You know, it's going to help you. And actually, if, you know, we use it in the right way, that also shapes the output of it, which is only going to benefit all of us.
We talk about the bias inequalities that undoubtedly exist. And hearing some of your solutions, it's really important. How concerning, though, do you find it that you look at this landscape and the most prominent figures... Musk, Altman, Bezos, Zuck. it's a certain kind of person. Does that concern you? Is that an issue?
I think that it's important to have diverse representation. Yes, absolutely. You know, but look at the owner of Canva. You know, look at, like, there are other, you know, incredible women who are also within this AI race, or as you call it, wars. Like, there are incredible women here. And I think it's more important that we spotlight them and talk about them, because they are amazing role models, even, you know, OpenAI with the appointment of, you know, Fiji, who's ex-Meta as well. So, you know, I think that there's more to be done. And I think there's more to be done in tech in general. And tech has always sort of suffered from this. But that's why it's important that we can all play a role. I think we all have far more agency than we think we do. And because this is output that is shaped by its user, I think thinking about it as you're co-creating when you're using it, you're playing a role here, I think is something we should always remember as well.
Can I ask you about trends there? You mentioned you guys are looking at trends as well. What is it when you're sort of looking at that horizon? You know, it's almost hard to look beyond AI at the moment. What else are you seeing? What's sort of tantalizing? What's nourishing your brain in terms of trends we should be thinking about?
Yeah, well, do you know, I mean, thinking about, just because we're in, like, the clocks have changed, we're in kind of, feels winter, Q4 is so here. You know, I'm thinking a lot about, you know, how we're discovering brands and how, you know, AI sort of kind of shifting discoverability, which I think is super interesting. Christmas purchases last year, 1 in 5 were discovered through LLMs.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what that is
totally.
This year.
Very curious about that. I'm really curious to see, well, what does that mean? What does that mean for brands? And I think, you know, that's a really interesting touch point to consider that you, as a brand, you may not have considered. We know a brand is, you know, the sum of all its different touch points that provide an impression for your audience. You know, what does that mean to marketing? When people are using kind of large language models to discover brands, it's very sort of problem-based. You know, I'm looking for a skincare brand because I've got this issue with my skin. And, you know, you can go into a bit more detail. It's quite problem solution orientated. And so I think that's a slightly different way of framing your products and thinking about how you frame your products. And, you know, so I'm really curious about that. And I'm really curious about what that means for Q4 this year, because I think it'll be fascinating to see like how many brands are going to be discovered on ChatGPT.
It really will. If you were a brand right now, if you worked at a brand, you obviously work with a lot of brands. Is it exciting for brands right now, or is it terrifying? Because there's so much unknown.
I mean, I'm an optimist, so
I'm always
going to say it's exciting. The reason I think it's exciting, just this piece of it, is so when people are using LLMs to discover brands, not only are they finding new brands, because you're not going in with a brand of choice, right? You're going in with a problem, but they're spending more. And it makes sense because actually, the best way of using, you know, a large language model is like you're spending a bit more time with it and you're asking it quite a few questions to get to you, your solution. So it's sort of akin to like a really good sales advisor. And I think that's really interesting for a brand, right? So for me, I would say that could just be this untapped opportunity. There's real potential there. And I would almost look at it as in its pilot season, like, what are you testing?
Mm.
You know, look at it like that.
We do talk a lot about how, you know, whether it's OpenAI or Grok or whatever it might be, how ultimately they're going to have to bring brands into the fold.
Mm-hmm.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
It's a really difficult question. Have you got any thoughts on how that might play out and how you might see advertising or commercial partnerships exist in that space? Whereas you say it's a very different world to what we've been seeing in search, for example.
I think that kind of the shoppable side is fascinating. Curious to see what happens from an advertising perspective. But I think that as a marketeer, you can future-proof your brand through that model by making sure that you're available and you are probably maybe a bit more narrow, bit more niche, a bit more narrow cast with, you know, what specific problems could a consumer be going to you for? I think you could be thinking a lot about, you know, what are all those proof points to make sure that you're discovered? So I just, you know, I think there's just a slightly different angle, which you already have as a brand. It's just pushing that out a bit more. Which I think is interesting, but yeah, let's see. I mean, that's the bit that I'm thinking a lot about, and I think we'll see more as the quarter, you know, continues and we see more data around what does that look like? How are people discovering this Christmas?
Can I ask a bit on ads? I mean, I keep talking about ChatGPT specifically. I mean, they're a $10 billion company. James Connolly, it's not my thought, it's his brilliant thought. You know, if they want to be a $100 billion company, you're not going to get there as subscriptions. Ads are inevitable. It's seductive for them. It's going to be seductive for brands, as you say, you kind of want to get into it. Do you feel like it isn't an inevitability? I mean, we've so long known the world is all about kind of search, and I go and find things, we learn to search, we know all about how display and video and those types of things. This could be something entirely different, couldn't it?
I mean, I would think yes. I would think that you would sort of get to a certain runway and you would then at that point say, right, this is when we switch advertising on. And we saw that obviously with social. So yeah, I would expect that, but it's such a different space. You know, you have this relationship in a way with your AI, right? So what does that mean? Yeah, let's see.
And if I take you all the way back to your time as a planner, as a media planner before Meta. Again, sort of similar question to George. In a way, this could be like the most exciting time ever in media, this brand new thing. But I guess at the same time, you're going, well, what can it do the things that I can do? Kind of what sets me apart? You know, if you're a strategist or a media planner, could be the kind of the best of times or slightly doomy. Where do you stand on it?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I think it's never been more interesting to be a strategist right now because of the number of touch points that you can connect with your audience. You know, there was a great research piece by Oxford University and Kantar called No Silver Bullet, where they analysed like millions of dollars spent on advertising and the Professor Felipe would compare it to, you know, being head chef and you're just working with different recipes, like trying different recipes to deliver on your outcome. And there are lots of different ways to mix these things. There isn't a right or wrong answer. There is no silver bullet. No channel should really take over 50% of the budget because there's so many channels. Why would it? We don't consume 50% in one space. And so because of that, you know, I think, well, that's the role of a planner. The role of a strategist or a planner has never been more important. And I think it's really important to keep curious as a strategist and to think about, okay, if, you know, I don't know, if my brand is Estée Lauder, like how am I appearing in LLMs? Because it doesn't align with, you know, brand fame. It's you know, slightly different approach. So I think it's a really exciting time to be a planner and, you know, the opportunities are really interesting. And I do think that you should just test things, just experiment with different flavors. Like Felipe, you know, Professor Felipe would say is an interesting approach.
Obviously, one of the tasks, if you are a planner, is to unlock the creativity of the brand and the advertising and the campaigns. Is that going to be more difficult with the rise of AI? And as we've touched upon the rise of investment commercially with LLMs. I mean, ultimately, my question is AI the death of creativity?
I hope not. I hope it's not the death of creativity. I mean, I think that imagination has never been a limitation, but ability to build, bring it to life has been. So my view on this is actually, I think creativity is more accessible than ever before. And I think it's a massive democratization of creativity. That's where the opportunity is. You know, I hope that we see the output of that. I mean, I think we are, you know, we are seeing the output of that, just creators, you know, the tools they have to build and create and is really powerful. And I think, you know, a third of our media is now consumed via creators. There's a reason for that. They're creating great content. So, you know, I'd like to think that is a sign and a signal to say, okay, actually there is so much opportunity for democratization of creativity. I also think that the ability to, you know, test multiple pieces of creative and produce more creative because of AI is no bad thing, to sort of see what kind of lands, what doesn't land. And the thing that reassures me is the way in which sort of platforms work is the better the creative, the better the reward. You know, your content has a user score, which is built on how valuable you or I see that creative piece. So, you know, the better work will rise up as opposed to, you know, the term AI slop. You know, I hope that doesn't, and it shouldn't based on the way algorithms work. But I'm a big fan of the democratization of creativity and giving more voices to this. I think will be interesting to sort of see, well, what does that look like?
And on that positive note, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. Mm-hmm. And also, we talk a lot about the issues of inequality in tech and in AI. And we don't spend nearly enough time talking about solutions and things that people are doing to be proactive and make a difference. And it's been really inspiring to hear you tell us your you know, your mission. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was terrific. That was so good. lovely to have some more positivity on this podcast. I was cracking up here, though. There are a couple of ones you're like, is it for brands? Is it sort of exciting or is it just really terrifying? But she has nothing, but she's very glass half full. I thought she was really good.
So many highlights from that. One kind of moment stuck out for me. One moment I thought was like really, really insightful. Was that I was right. They call him the Zuck.
Not right.
Confirmed on this podcast.
This is just...
Confirmed.
Molly, be kind on the edit there. I think we keep everything in because it clearly shows to anyone listening to this that like probably one person in a company of about a million people have called it. But whatever. Some amazing stuff in there. 1 in 5 Christmas sales last year from LLMs. What on earth is going to be this year? Yeah, there's loads of stuff in there. It was great.
Really good. Really good. And confirmed that they call him the Zuck. So there we go. Also, I liked how you called him Mark. You called the Zuck Mark, like your best mate.
Everyone calls him.
Do you visit him in Hawaii on his little in his bunker? The Zuck.
I'm just being relatable.
Right. No AI challenge this week. James has got away with it. We'll be back. You got lucky there. We have got a live edition of this podcast at the Future Media on Wednesday. If you're going, come along. There's T-shirts to be won. Don't get too excited.
I think that's it, isn't it? That's the leading thing. You could. Is it going to be fired out of one of those guns that they do at sort of, you know, T4 on the beach?
The baseball.
That sort of thing.
You've got to. Oh, that's retro. Come along and you'll find out.
Brilliant.
Come along. That's all we've got time for this week. We're off to prepare our T-shirt cannon. We're loading it up. A big thank you for listening, as always. If you've got a question for James, actually, by the way, I will just say, if you are going to Future Media, the event on Wednesday, and you've got a question for us, email us, aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. To be honest, if you've got a question for a future podcast as well, email us. Don't forget, there's a T-shirt to be won, maybe not fired out of a cannon. If you've enjoyed listening, do subscribe, rate and share the podcast. We would love that. But for now, a massive thank you to Team AI Haven't a Clue. Thank you to producer Molly Carter, of course. We will catch you next time. Thanks to the Zuck. And James, for now, remember...
Don't keep curious, stay curious.